session number 9422, reel 14.
Mr. Harold Hayward, Reel 14. How well did you know the men of your platoon as individuals?
I had to get to know them again. I was not Welsh. And, of course, that was a slight barrier, that I didn't speak with a Welsh accent, which they all did. But I had known what it was to be just as AU, you know, like that. And so I endeavoured... I wrote down all their names, and, if possible, their nicknames, so that when I addressed them, at least I use their names. It makes a heck of a lot of difference instead of you, you and you. And certainly I learned, first of all, I learned my NCO's name, sergeant, then the four corporals, and then lance corporals, then the men.
Did you feel you were a popular officer after a
while?
Oh,
how can I tell, Maury? How can I tell that?
Besides knowing the importance of privates' names,
yes.
What other value did you find from your own experience as a private?
Well, I, after a time, having the sense of their letters, I got to know something about each man, didn't I? You know, how they were writing home. So I knew how to treat one man a little differently from the other because of how I had sized him up from the letters that I'd censored. And I tried to apply what I thought I'd got hold of then to my relationship with each chap. But when the colonel said, oh no, you don't really go on to that. Anyway, that's what it was. I was on reasonably good terms. I never crimed anybody, as it happened. Never had to put anyone in a crime sheet.
Were you very conscious, having been a private, of the differences between your position as an officer, the benefits you
have? Yes, but you must understand I'd been through cadet school, which was halfway between private and officer. Very much so amongst the people who were only just privates or cadets in the cadet school. I was lifted up, probably every other one was a member of some county family. As I say, Bristol's Own was a very fellowship battalion, so I think I knew how to treat one of my men from another man after a time with the aid of the censoring.
Did you... How different was your life when you got into the trenches?
Yes.
In the Ancre area, you were with A Company or B Company, it's not...
No, are you now going back to 12th classes, or are you talking about 15th, 12th?
15th, 12th.
No, I was in B Company.
B Company. And when you went into the trenches, did you get a dugout to yourself?
No, I shared one with the other officers of the company, because two of us were out on duty while the other two were sleeping or trying to get some.
Were you aware that in having a dugout, you probably had more than your men had?
More comfortable, no deeper. The Germans, of course, they had a great strategic advantage. They had dugouts 30 feet deep. We had them about, at the most, 10 feet.
But describe an officer's dugout, what it was like?
Well, the company officer's dugout, I would describe, and there probably was... There might have been a rough... wooden, what do you call it? Rough wooden piece of furniture on which you lay instead of having to lie on mud. And then, of course, I dare say we fed a little differently. We had our own officers, batmen, who acted as our cooks, so we probably had things a bit nicer than when I did out in the trench as a man.
Would it be different food, or would it be just better prepared?
Oh, a bit of both.
What other... Did you have your own personal Batman as well?
Yes, oh, I had my own personal Batman.
What was your relationship like with him?
And
what
well, his name was Jones. Half right. And he was old enough to be my father. And in a sense, he treated me as his son. And I couldn't do anything... I couldn't want anything done, but what he wouldn't do it. Anything. In fact, the one regret my mother had before she died was she never met Jones, because she particularly wished to do something for him, because I told her what an easy time he tried to make it.
What sort of things would he do to make your life easier?
Well, of course, he'd get the shaving water, and then he'd, when we had our battalion haversacks, he would, when we went up the line, he would roll that up and put it away till I came out again. That instead of the haversack on my back, big thing, you know, about as big as that. And he looked after that and saw it was nice and clean, and that I got my proper ration of food. Have I not shown you the jug out there?
Well, not now, because no, they right. won't be able to see it on
yes.
the tape.
Well, he carried that on his back for 3 months till they came across my kit, which eventually they did, and he put this jug inside, and it came over, and Mother thought the world of that.
So your life as an officer was more comfortable than
indeed,
it had been
yes, yes. Wasn't pleasant.
Now, what were the... you went up to the line. Could you describe the situation when you were in the line and where exactly you were and what was happening?
Yes, yes. Well, you would go by communication trench, and then the first line of triangles to this communication trench would be the reserve platoon, and then the next one would be the support platoon, then in front of them and facing the fire, with the fire step, looking over towards the German line, would be the platoon on active duty on the fire step.
This you were going backwards and forwards to this Avaloy Wood place, were you?
Well, Avaloy Wood is the village is behind evacuated villages behind Avaloy, where some sort of shelter, you know, even if the houses have been knocked about, at least they provided shelter against rain.
And that's where you went to when you were in the line?
No, that's where I went to when we were out of the line.
And when you were in the line, you were...
In one of these dugouts.
But that was always the sector you went to. You didn't go to any other part.
Oh, yes, we moved about. For instance, A Company might be there on one occasion where the battalion was in line, and B Company there and CD. And then next time, we'd be like that. So everybody took a chance, took a share of getting good or bad lines of trenches.
But the battalion always went to the same section of line, did it?
The which?
The battalion always went to the same
oh,
section.
Oh, no, of line. No, even that moved about. Well, from battalion to battalion in the brigade. And then the brigade might move out, and another brigade would come and take that sector. And again, within the brigade, the battalions took different sections along the line.
So you were broadly speaking in the Ancre area, but is it... Where would you say you were mainly?
Well, it was a definite time. 7 days in the line, 7 days in support, 7 days in reserve. Then the battalion came out of the line and you came out at rest.
But where basically were you in the line? What was the name of the sector that you
me
were
personally?
In?
Yeah. Oh, are you asking me what part of Haig's command? Up the Arc River a little bit, about 3 miles from Albert, towards the River Arc source. You know, I told you I crossed the Arc at night, and it was only about as wide as this room.
About 15
there. See? And, but...
And you were you were mainly in this area throughout this period?
Yes, yes. Within the divisions territory. brigades changed places within the corps, battalions changed places within the division, companies changed places within the battalion.
How had the warfare and the trench life changed now?
Between when I was there in 16, you mean, to 18? Not a great deal, of course. I left the 12th Crosses in 16 with the trenches all very much first-class defences. When I joined the Welsh Division, they'd only sort of just scratched small trenches, no dugouts at all, not as there had been for us at Arab. So, in fact, on the way up, the trench, the communication trench at Arar, started in the town of Arar, and you picked up your Dixie of tea on one handle.
But was the life in the trenches recognisably still the same?
About, but not quite so smart as it had been at Arar.
But Arras was just one place on the front in 16. You also described situation on the right-hand sector of the Somme in the marshlands, which is very different. What I mean is, was trench warfare, had it developed? Were there any new developments, any new things that you'd noticed?
Well, there was gas. And
what can you tell me about that? How was that affecting the
war? Well, I was never in gas. I went through several gas courses because when they brought out different protective helmets to learn the proper use of them, and eventually the respirator, as known by civilians during the Second World War, had come into the trenches. We wore those, of course, over our chest, ready at any moment if there'd been a bombardment with gas. And but I never had occasion to put them on. The Germans never made a gas attack against our line.
Had anything else developed? Were you getting the same food? Were the Germans using different weapons?
Well, by contrast, it seemed to be so much better because the food at home was so much worse. Not that it was in itself, and I knew. When I was in this, I must think about when I was in the 12th Crosses. I remember on more than one occasion going 8 to a loaf, and if you were the last to come, all that was of that loaf was pieces of crust and crumb, and that had to last you for the next day. Not a good slice of crust. But the usual thing was 4 to a loaf in our division. Day's ration.
What other responsibilities, when you were in the front line?
Yes,
as an officer. Besides the setting of you described some of your duties you'd have to do with your platoon. What other things would you have to do as an officer? How would your daily routine change?
Well, at night time, if the wire in front of our fire step was falling to pieces, I would perhaps have to take a half my platoon out and rewire it on the stakes. I learned how to do that, you see, I learned at cadet school.
And what did you do?
Well, put it in order so that there was that entanglement for any attacking German troops to get through if they hadn't blown it down with their artillery.
What other jobs would you have? Did you ever have any raids or reconnaissance patrols?
I never made a raid. I never sustained a raid. But other platoons in the both in the 12th Crosses and the 15th Welsh did, but it just happened not to come my way.
Did you do any reconnaissance patrols?
No, I did. I may have crawled out to a sap, you know, that's just running a little sap out, and listened to see what was going on. Of course, you're out on a limb there, probably 30 yards away from your line, don't you? So if the Germans had come, they'd get round you without you getting any assistance from your own men. But that was a listening sap.
Are there any other responsibilities you can think of that you now had as an officer in the line?
not to see everybody's rifles entirely clean at every time of the day. It was in working order. They got plenty of ammunition. That was essential number one.
Now, when you were on rest, I believe you became battalion works officer. Could you tell me how that arose?
Yes. Well, apart from the REs who did most of the works, you know, for a brigade or division, battalions themselves had to provide some sort of fatigues of that nature. And how it came about, I don't know, but I was appointed, no more than that, works officer. That meant to say two things. I left the company mess and went and fed in the battalion headquarters mess. And my job then was to go around the trenches, and if they're in any way knocked about and not first class defensive position, I had I had say a company one night to take out and get that prepared, so I wasn't very popular. Another thing was the artillery had blown the signals wire trenches right up, so that we had to dig more of telephone wire trenches. That meant me stepping out perhaps 10 yards and pushing something into the ground, and there I said, that's your bit. They had to go down, I think, 4 foot. When they finished, they could go back to rest. So I wasn't popular there. But I tried to do something against that. There was divisional sports, and I thought, well, I must try and do what I can. I'd run a bit at school, and so when I was out of the line at the time, I went long distance cross country runs, and in the cross country race, although I wasn't the first home, because people like RAMC, ASC, staff clerks, they'd had all the opportunity of rehearsing, you see. But I thought, well, I'll get myself in some sort of fitness, because in the line you're not fit, there's no running at all, and I did that, and I won a little back of popularity, or I lost a little of the unpopularity by being the first infantryman home out of the whole division. The other people were back-enders, and that gave me a little lift up within my battalion and with my company and with my platoon.
Being battalion works officer seems to be a pretty unpleasant job.
Altogether. Nobody had a good word. I mean, there it was. They had been sitting down playing cards. I'd taken them out. I didn't even have the benefit of their own officers along with me. I had to detail the work that these chaps had to dig, and how far down, be satisfied that there was a signals wire trench sufficient for the REs to lay, or the artillery.
And you also would not be getting your rest, proper rest?
No, not at all, no. I slept during the daytime.
And you'd be going back to the danger area as well?
We were out at rest. That was safe enough. No trouble about that. But of course, to do this work was in the front line or before it. But there's one thing I did do, which I turned the tables a little bit, that the general said, or the CRE, Commander Royal Engineer, said, we must have another communication trench. It'll be 1,000 yards long from the front line, right the way through reserve support, right the way back into the quiet country. And it was for me to have that dug. And again, there it was, I had to pace it out. And I remember that it came around twice to every man to do that bit on two nights. But there was underground grumbling all the time at me. Of course, because the trench had to be in good order, you know, to lay the line, the signals line. And I heard a lot of backslang about it. But it occurred to me, I thought, now what can I do? I thought, well, now I'll go and see the colonel. And I said, now, do you mind, could you approach the general and ask that this trench should be called Carmarthen Trench? He said, well, I'll see. And the morning before we were going to come out of that sector, he said, Divisioner said, you can call that Carmarthen Trench. I had already got little labels painted up, and 100 yards before the first man of the battalion coming out of the line, I got one of these about every 100 and 200 yards, and then chaps came along, Carmarthen, Carmarthen.
Now, you come from B Company to this position as battalion works officer.
Only out of the line, yes.
So you stayed in B Company and
in the line
with number 5 platoon in the line. You also, I believe, another job you had, you as in your mess president.
That's had, right.
You had.
I told you I got on that job in the company to save me money. It had been spent on whiskey.
You told me that, but you didn't tell me, I believe, you organised a special grand night.
That's right. I did. From time to time, regiments had what they call grand night. That's to say, the brigadier and his staff, the commanding officers of sister regiments in the brigade, and the adjutants, they'd all come over, and just as much as I'd been round the countryside to give the company officers jolly good meals, I cycled down to Railhead and made arrangements with people who'd come up from the coast to bring fish up, a thing you'd never heard of before. And I fixed it. I went down twice and got fish, and I got ingredients for our cooks, who were trained cooks and could make a good second course, and cheese we had in the normal way. But I did that, and the battalion was going to have a grand night, I think that's the phrase, and the colonel said, will you act for mess president? Normally a major would do that, but they knew what I was doing in the company, so they knew I got some practice. So I wrote to Railhead and said what I wanted by the people who came up just as far as that and no further, and then I went back and picked up what I'd asked them to bring up, and brought it back, and our cooks were quite good. They were pleased. They hadn't had any opportunity to do that at all in France, and they'd had, in their training as cooks, they had been given cooking training, and they were rather pleased to have a go. And so I put this on. I think I put about a 4-course meal on, and people were licking their lips, and everything was going quite well. And then the grub finished, the drinks came on, then we had one or two people in the band come into the hut, Nissen hut, where this was being held, to play a tune. And all that they played was, now what was it? I thought of it this morning. Bunny hugging. You had a partner, and as the music struck up, you got up and bunny hugged up and around the room with this one chap all the evening between drinks. Well, apparently, at about midnight, there were only two wallflowers, myself one, and the brigadier the other. And I got up, staggered across the room, pulled him up, and danced with him for 3 hours. People said to me next day, they said, you've got a nerve getting the general to bunny hug with you all that time. I said, I can't remember. He said, it was for 3 hours, you and he were going up and down the room and everybody getting out of your way. And that's when Jones turned up with a stretcher and a pal and carried me back on the stretcher to my tent.
You were a little inebriated then, either.
Yes, not a great deal, because I don't drink a lot, and after all, if you dance a good bit, that takes care of you. But I was drinking, but I wasn't drinking. I never drank spirits.
Were there any other mess games or things that you had on
well,
evenings?
Yes. I didn't play it. I played bridge solo, but I didn't play. Not the gambling game. Out midwest. Where you gamble on a
poker.
Card.
Poker.
That's right. I never touched poker. I didn't have enough money for that. A lot of people in the Welsh regiment, officers, had private incomes, and they could double up on their stakes, which I couldn't do. So I never touched. I never entered a poker game.
There was quite some gambling going on.
Oh yes. Oh, the usual. What else could you do in that? When you're out of the line, I was the funny oddbod, which I'd been in the 12th classes in 1914. Going and getting a newspaper, in those days the Daily Mail, to read. I was called Daily Mail in the 12th classes, and I would cycle 5 miles to get the Parisian Daily Mail to read.
So, what about other sillier mess games, you know, on mess night? Would they have any of those, the sort of climbing?
Daft games, yes. Well, I dare say there were, but I can't remember now. But bunny hugging was the thing that kept you going all night, plus the drinks.
Would that sort of thing where they were bunny hugging round, would that happen often, or was that an isolated...
Oh, that might be once in three times that we were out of the line, and the brigade was out of the line, and we could get all of the general and the other battalion commanders to come as our guests.
Did you have any concert parties or anything like that to entertain you?
We did in the 5th Division. Our Kitchener Division, which brigade, went into the 5th Regular Division to allow a regular brigade to come and stiffen the Kitchener Division. We got a concert party out of that.
Twelfth
Gloucesters could have supplied a concert party of its own. There were a lot of talented.
What about with the Welsh battalion?
Then? I can't remember there being a concert party. The Welsh sing amongst themselves, as you know.
Was there a lot of singing going on?
Oh yes, they would sing all you know, Sospan Fark and all the Welsh songs that they learned as boys.
Is this in the mess, or would the men sing it as well?
Oh, the men in their own messes and officers in their messes.
What about on the march? Would they sing then?
I didn't hear it. They weren't marching tunes, but the Welsh, you know, are great singers and they're lovely voices.
So it was proper singing, not sort of...
Well, it was army songs, but sung well with people whose nationality gave them a better voice than the English have.